Urgent footsteps ran across the stones, and the pigeon was lifted off Corporal Buggy Swires. He was a gnome and barely 6 inches tall. On the other hand, as the head and only member of Ankh-Morpork City Watch's airborne section, he spent most of his time so high that everyone looked small. "Are you all right, Buggy?" said Commander Vimes.
"Not too bad, sir," said Buggy, spitting out a feather. "But it wasn't elegant, was it? I'll do better next time. Trouble is, pigeons are too stupid to be steered."
"What have you got me?"
"The Times sent this up from their cat, sir. I tracked it all the way."
"Well done, Buggy."
There was a flurry of wings, and the buzzard landed on the battlements.
"And what is his name?"
Vimes added. The buzzard gave him the mad, distant look of all birds.
"She's Morag, sir. Trained by the Pixies. Wonderful bird."
"Was she the one we paid a crate of whisky for?"
"Yes, sir, and worth every dram."
The pigeon struggled in Vimes's hand.
"You wait there, then, Buggy, and I'll get Reg to come out with some raw rabbit," he said, and walked into his tower.
Sergeant Angua was waiting by his desk, reading the Living Testament of Nuggan. "Is that a carrier pigeon, sir?" she said as Vimes sat down.
"No," said Vimes. "Hold it a minute, will you? I want to have a look inside the message capsule."
"It does look like a carrier pigeon," said Angua, putting down the book.
"Ah, but messages flying through the air are an abomination unto Nuggan," said Vimes. "The prayers of the faithful bounce off them, apparently. No, I think I've found someone's lost pet, and I'm looking in this little tube here to see if I can find the owner's name and address, because I'm a kind man."
"So you are not actually waylaying field reports from the Times, then, sir?" said Angua, grinning.
"Not as such, no. I'm just such a keen reader that I want to see tomorrow's news today. And Mr. De Word seems to have a knack for finding things out. Angua, I want to stop these stupid people fighting so that we can all go home, and if that means allowing the occasional pigeon to have a crap on my desk, so be it."
"Oh, sorry, sir, I didn't notice. I expect it'll wipe off."
"Go and get Reg to find some rabbit for the buzzard, will you?"
When she'd gone, Vimes carefully unscrewed the end of the tube and pulled out a roll of very thin paper. He unfolded it, smoothed it out, and read the tiny writing, smiling as he did so. Then he turned the paper over and looked at the picture. He was still staring at it when Angua returned with Reg and half a bucket of crunchy rabbit bits.
"Anything interesting, sir?" said Angua, ingenuously.
"Well, yes, you could say that. All plans are changed, all bets are off. Ha! Oh, Mr. De Word, you poor fool."
He handed her the paper. She read the story carefully.
"Good for them, sir," she said. "Most of them look 15 years old. And when you see the size of those dragoons, well, you've got to be impressed."
"Yes, yes, you could say that," said Vimes, his face gleaming like a man with a joke to share. "Tell me, did De Word interview any Borogravian high-ups when he arrived?"
"No, sir, I understand he was turned away. They don't really know what a reporter is, so I gathered the adjutant threw him out and said he was a nuisance."
"Dear me, the poor man," said Vimes, still grinning. "You met Prince Heinrich the other day. Describe him to me."
Angua cleared her throat. "Well, sir, he was largely green, shading to blue, with overtones of girls and a trail of—"
"I meant describe him to me on the assumption that I'm not a werewolf who sees with his nose," said Vimes.
"Oh, yes," said Angua. "Sorry, sir. 6'2", 180 pounds, fair hair, green-blue eyes, sabre scar on his left cheek, wears a monocle in his right eye, waxed moustache."
"Good. Well observed. And now look at Captain Horrence in the picture, will you?"
She looked again and said, very quietly, "Oh, dear. They didn't know."
"He wasn't going to tell him, was he? Would they have seen a picture?"
Angua shrugged.
"I doubt it, sir. I mean, where would they see it? There's never been a newspaper here until the Times carts turned up last week."
"Some woodcut, maybe?"
"No, they're an abomination, unless they're of the Duchess."
"So they really didn't know. And De Word has never seen him," said Vimes. "But you saw him when we arrived the other day. What did you think of him, just between ourselves?"
"An arrogant son of a bitch, sir, and I know what I'm talking about. The kind of man who thinks he knows what a woman likes, and it's himself. All very friendly, right up until they say no."
"Stupid?"
"I don't think so, but not as clever as he thinks he is."
"Right.
because he didn't tell our writer friend his real name. Did you read the bit at the end? Angua read at the end of the text. Perry, the captain threatened and harangued me after the recruits had gone. Alas, I had no time to fish for the manacle key in the privy. Please let the prince know where they are soonest. WDW. Looks like William didn't take to him either, she said. I wonder why the prince was out with a scouting party. You said he was an arrogant son of a bitch, said Vimes. Maybe he just wanted to pop across and see if his aunt was still breathing. His voice trailed off. Angua looked at Vimes's face, which was staring through her. She knew her boss. He thought war was simply another crime like murder. He didn't much like people with titles, and regarded being a duke as a job description rather than a lever to greatness. He had an odd sense of humour, and he had a sense for what she thought of as harbingers, those little straws in the wind that said there was a storm coming. "In the nuddy," he chuckled. "Could have slit their throats. Didn't. They took their boots away and left them to hop home in the nude." The squad, it seemed, had found a friend. She waited. "I feel sorry for the Borogravians," he said. "Me too, sir," said Angua. "Oh, why?" "Their religion's gone bad on them. Have you seen the latest abominations? They abominate the smell of beets and people with red hair. In rather shaky writing, sir. And root vegetables are a staple here. 3 years ago, it was abominable to grow root crops on ground which had grown grain or peas." Vimes looked blank, and she remembered that he was a city boy. "It means no real crop rotation, sir," she explained. "The ground sours. Diseases build up. You were right when you said they were going mad. These commandments are dumb, and any farmer can see that. I imagine people go along with them as best they can, but sooner or later you either have to break them and feel guilty, or keep them and suffer. For no reason, sir. I've had a look around. They're very religious here, but their gods let them down. No wonder they mostly pray to their royal family." She watched him stare at the piece of pigeon post for a while, then he said, "How far is it to Plots?" "About 50 miles, said Angua, adding, "As the wolf runs, maybe 6 hours. I can leave right away." "Good. Buggy'll keep an eye on you. Little Henry is going to hop home, or meet one of his patrols, or an enemy patrol, whatever. But the midden is going to hit the windmill when everyone sees that picture. I bet de Word would have let him out if he'd been nice and polite. That'll teach him to meddle with the awesome power of a fair and free press." He sat upright and rubbed his hands together like a man who meant business. "Now, let's get that pigeon on its way again before it gets missed, eh? Get Reg to lurch along to where the Times people are staying and tell them their pigeon flew in the wrong window. Again." That was a good time, Polly remembered. They didn't go down to the river docks. They could see there was no boat there. They hadn't turned up, and the boatman had left without them. Instead, they crossed the bridge and headed up into the forests, with Blouse leading the way on his ancient horse. Maledict went on ahead, and Jade brought up the rear. You didn't need a light at night when a vampire led the way, and a troll at the rear would certainly discourage hangers-on. No one mentioned the boat. No one spoke at all. The thing was, Polly realised, that they were no longer marching alone. They shared the secret. That was a huge relief, and right now they didn't need to talk about it. Nevertheless, it was probably a good idea to keep up a regular output of farts, belches, nose-pickings and groin-scratchings just in case. Polly didn't know whether to be proud that they'd taken her for a boy. I mean, she thought, I'd worked hard to get it right. I mastered the walk. Except, I suppose, what I really did was mistress the walk. Ha ha ha. I invented the fake shaving routine, and the others didn't even think of that. I haven't cleaned my fingernails for days, and I pride myself on being able to belch with the best of them. So, I mean, I was trying. It was just slightly annoying to find that she'd succeeded so well. After a few hours of this, when true dawn was breaking, they smelled smoke. There was a faint pall of it among the trees. Lieutenant Blouse raised a hand for them to halt, and Jackram joined him in whispered conversation. Polly stepped forward.
"Permission to whisper too, Sarge. I think I know what this is."
Jackram and Blouse stared at her. Then the sergeant said, "All right, Perks, go and find out if you're right, then." That was an aspect that hadn't occurred to Polly, but she'd left herself open. Jackram relented when he saw her expression, nodded to Maledict and said, "Go with him, Corporal." They left the squad behind and walked forward carefully, over the beds of new fallen leaves. The smoke was heavy and fragrant, and above all, reminiscent. Polly headed to where thicker undergrowth was taking advantage of the extra light of a clearing, and pushed through into an airy thicket of hazel trees. The smoke was denser here, and barely moving. The thicket ended. A few yards away, in a wide patch of cleared ground, a mound like a small volcano was spewing flame and smoke into the air.
"Charcoal oven," whispered Polly. "Just clay, plastered on a stack of hazel. Should sit there smouldering for days. The wind probably caught it last night and the fire's broken out. Won't make good charcoal now. It's burning too fast."
They edged around it, keeping to the bushes. Other clay domes were dotted around the clearing, with faint wisps of steam and smoke coming from their tops. There were a couple of ovens in the process of being built, the fresh clay stacked alongside some bundles of hazel sticks. There was a hut, and the domes, and nothing else but silence, apart from the crackle of the runaway fire.
"The charcoal burner's dead, or nearly dead," said Polly.
"He's dead," said Maledict. "There is a smell of death here."
"You can smell it above the smoke."
"Sure," said Maledict. "Some things were good at smelling. But how did you know?"
"They watched the burns like hawks," said Polly, staring at the hut. "He wouldn't let it go out of control like that if he was alive. Is he in the hut?"
"They are in the hut," said Maledict flatly.
He set off across the smoky ground. Polly ran after him.
"Man and woman," she said. "Their wives often live out with—"
"Can't tell, not if they're old," said Maledict shortly. The hut was only a temporary thing, made of woven hazel and roofed with tarpaulin.
The charcoal burners moved around a lot, from coppice to coppice. It didn't have windows, but it did have a doorway, with a rag for a door. The rag had been pulled away. The doorway was dark. "I've got to be a man about this," she thought. There was a woman on the bed, and a man lying on the floor. There were other details which the eye saw but the brain did not focus on. There was a great deal of blood. The couple had been old. They would not grow older. Back outside, Polly took frantic mouthfuls of air.
"Do you think those cavalry men did it?" she said at last,
and then realised that Maledict was shaking.
"Oh, the blood," she said.
"I can deal with it. It's okay. I just have to get my mind right. It's okay."
He leaned against the hut, breathing heavily.
"Okay, I'm fine," he said. "And I can't smell horses. Why don't you use your eyes? Nice, soft mud everywhere after the rain, but no hoof prints. Plenty of footprints, though. We did it."
"Don't be silly. We were—"
The vampire had reached down and pulled something out of the fallen leaves. He rubbed the mud off it with a thumb. In thin pressed brass, it was the flaming cheese badge of the ins and outs.
"But I thought we were the good guys," said Polly weakly. "If we were guys, I mean."
"I think I need a coffee," said the vampire.
"Deserters," said Sergeant Jackram 10 minutes later. "It happens."
He tossed the badge into the fire.
"But they were on our side," said Shufti.
"So? Not everyone's a nice gentleman like you, Private Manacle," said Jackram. "Not after a few years of getting shot at and eating rat scubbo. On the retreat from Krusk, I had no water for 3 days, and then fell on my face in a puddle of horse piss. A circumstance which did nothing for my feelings of goodwill toward my fellow man or horse. Something the matter, Corporal?"
Maledict was on his knees going through his pack with a distracted air.
"My cough is gone, Sarge." "Should have packed it properly, then," said Jackram unsympathetically. "I did, Sarge. I washed out the engine and packed it up with the beanbag after supper last night. I know I did. I don't take coffee lightly." "If someone else did, they're going to wish I'd never been born," growled Jackram, looking around at the rest of the squad. "Anyone else lost anything?"
I wasn't going to say anything, because I wasn't sure," Shufti volunteered. "But my stuff looked as if it had been pulled about when I opened my pack just now."
"Oh-ho," said Jackram. "Well, well, well. I'll say this once, lads. Pinching from your mates is a hanging offence, understood? Nothing breaks down morale faster than some sneaky little sod dipping into people's packs.
and if I find out someone's been at it, I'll swing on their heels." He glared at the squad. "I ain't going to demand that you all empty out your packs as if you's criminals," he said, "but you'd better check that nothing's missing. Of course, one of you might have packed something that wasn't theirs by accident, okay? Packing in a rush, poor light, easy to do. In which case, you sort it out amongst yourselves, understand? Now I'm off to have a shave. Lieutenant Blowes is having a throw-up behind the shelter after a viewing of the corpses, poor chap."
Polly rummaged desperately in her pack. She'd thrown things in anyhow last night, but what she was frantically searching for was not there. Despite the heat from the charcoal mounds, she shivered. The ringlets had gone. Feverishly, she tried to remember the events of yesterday evening. They'd just dumped their packs as soon as they were in the barracks, right? And Maledict had made himself some coffee at supper time. He'd washed and dried the little machine. There was a thin little wail. Wazza, the meagre contents of her pack spread around her, held up the coffee engine. It had been stamped almost flat.
"B-b-b-b-,"
she began. Polly's mind worked faster, like a mill wheel in a flood. Then everyone took their packs into the back room with all the mattresses, didn't they? And so they'd still be there when the squad fought the troopers.
"Oh, Wazza," said Shufti. "Oh, dear!"
So who might have sneaked in through the back door? There was no one around except the squad and the cavalrymen. Perhaps someone wanted to watch and cause a little trouble on the way.
"Strappy," she said aloud. "It must have been him. The little weasel ran into the cavalry and then snuck back to watch. He was damn well going through our packs out the back. Oh, come on," she added as they stared at her. "Can you see Wazza stealing from anyone? Anyway, when did she have the chance?"
"Wouldn't they have taken him prisoner?"
said Tonka, staring at the crushed machine in Wazza's shaking hands. "If he'd whipped off his shako and jacket, he'd be just another stupid civilian, wouldn't he? Or he could say he was a deserter. He could make up some story," said Polly. "You know how he was with Wazza. He went through my pack too, stole something of mine."
"What was it?"
said Shufti.
"Just something, okay? He just wanted to make trouble."
She watched them, thinking.
"Sounds convincing," said Maledict, nodding abruptly. "Little weasel. Okay, Wazza, just fish out the beans, and I'll do the best I can."
"There's no...
Maledict put a hand over his eyes.
"No beans?"
he said.
"Please, has anyone got the beans?"
There was a general rummaging and a general lack of a result.
"No beans," moaned Maledict. "He threw away the beans." "Come on, lads, we've got to get the sentries posted," said Jackram, approaching. "Sorted it all out, have you?"
"Yes, Sarge. Oz thinks,"
Shufti began. "It was all a bit of a mispacking, Sarge," said Polly quickly, anxious to keep away from anything connected with missing ringlets.
"Nothing to worry about. All sorted, Sarge. No problem. Nothing to worry anyone. Not a thing, Sarge."
Jackram looked from the startled squad to Polly, and back again. She felt his gaze bore into her, daring her to change her expression of mad, tense honesty.
"Yes," he said slowly. "Right. Sorted out, eh? Well done, Perks. Attention! Officer present."
"Yes, yes, Sergeant, thank you. But I don't think we need to be too formal," said Blouse, who looked rather pale. "A word with you when you have finished, if you please. And I think we should bury the, bodies."
Jackram saluted.
"Right you are, sir. Two volunteers to dig a grave for those poor souls. Goom and Toot. What's he doing?"
Lofty was over by the blazing charcoal oven. She was holding a burning branch a foot or two from her face and turning it this way and that, watching the flames.
"I'll do it, Sarge,"
said Tonka, stepping beside Wazza.
"What are you, married?"
said Jackram.
"You are on guard, Holter. I doubt whoever did it'll come back, but if they do, you sing out, right? You and Igor come with me, and I'll show you your stations."
"No coffee,"
moaned Maledict.
"Foul muck, anyway," said Jackram, walking away. "A cup of hot sweet tea is the soldier's friend."
Polly grabbed the kettle for Blouse's shaving water and hurried away. That was another thing you learned in the military. Look busy. look busy, and no one worried too much about what you were busy at.
Bloody, bloody strappy. He'd got her hair. He'd try and use it against her if he could, that was certain. That'd be his style.
What would he do now? Well, he'd want to keep away from Jackram, that'd be another certainty. He'd wait, somewhere. She'd have to, too.
The squad had made camp upwind of the smoke. It was supposed to be a rest stop, since no one had got much sleep last night. But as Jackram handed out tasks, he reminded them, "There is an old military saying which is, hard luck for you." There was no question of using the woven hut, but there were a few tarpaulin-covered frames built to keep the coppiced wood dry. Those not given jobs to do lay down on the stacked piles of twigs, which were yielding and didn't smell, and were in any case better than the inhabited palliasses back at the barracks. Blouse, as an officer, had a shelter to himself. Polly had stacked bundles of twigs to make a chair that was at least springy. Now she laid out his shaving things and turned to go.
"Could you shave me, Perks?" said the lieutenant.
Fortunately, Polly's back was turned, and he didn't see her expression.
"This damn hand is quite swollen, I'm afraid," Blouse went on. "I would not normally ask, but—"
"Yes, of course, sir," said Polly, because there was no alternative.
"Well, now, let's see. She'd got quite good at scraping a blunt razor across a face bare of hair, yes. Oh, and she'd shaved a few dead pigs in the kitchens at the Duchess, but that was only because nobody likes hairy bacon. They didn't really count, did they?" Panic rose, and rose faster at the sight of Jackram approaching. She was going to cut an officer's throat in the presence of a sergeant. Well, when in doubt, bustle. Military rule. Bustle and hope there's a surprise attack.
"Are you not being a little strict with the men, sergeant?" said Blouse, as Polly flapped a towel around his neck.
"Not, sir. Keep 'em occupied, that's the bunny. Otherwise they'll mope," said Jackram confidently.
"Yes, but they have just seen a couple of badly mutilated bodies," said Blouse, and shuddered.
"Good practice for 'em, sir. They'll see plenty more."
Polly turned to the shaving gear she'd laid out on a towel. "Let's see. Cutthroat razor? Oh, dear. The grey stone for coarse sharpening, the red stone for fine sharpening, the soap, the brush, the bowl. Well, at least she knew how to make foam."
"Deserters, sergeant. Bad business," Blouse went on.
"You always get 'em, sir. That's why the pay is always late. Walking away from 3 months' back pay makes a man think twice."
"Messer de Word, the newspaper man, said there had been a great many desertions, sergeant. It is very strange that so many men would desert from a winning side."
Polly whirled the brush vigorously. Jackram, for the first time since Maledict had joined, looked uncomfortable.
"But whose side's he on, sir?" he said.
"Sergeant, I am sure you are not a stupid man," said Blouse, as behind him foam poured over the edge of the bowl and flopped onto the floor. "There are desperate deserters abroad. Our borders appear to be sufficiently unguarded that enemy cavalry operate 40 miles inside our fair country. And High Command appears to be so desperate, yes, desperate, Sergeant, that even half a dozen untrained and frankly very young men must go to the front."
The foam had a life of its own now. Polly hesitated.
"Hot towel first, please, Parks," said Blouse.
"Yes, sir, sorry, sir, forgot, sir," said Polly, panic rising. She had a vague recollection of walking past the barber shop in months.
Hot towel on face, right. She grabbed a small towel, tipped boiling water onto it, wrung it out, and dropped it on the lieutenant's face. He did not actually scream as such.
Something else worries me, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
The cavalry must have apprehended Corporal Strappy. I cannot see how else they found out about our men.
Good thinking, sir,
said the sergeant, watching Polly apply the lather across Blouse's mouth and nose.
"I do hope they didn't torture the poor man," said the lieutenant.
Jackram was silent on that issue, but meaningfully so. Polly wished he wouldn't keep glancing at her.
"But why would a deserter head straight for the front?" said Blouse.
"Makes sense, sir, for an old soldier, especially a political."
"Really?"
"Trust me on that, sir," said Jackram.
Behind Blouse, Polly brushed the razor up and down the red stone. It was already as slick as ice.
"But our boys, Sergeant, are not old soldiers. It takes
2 weeks to turn a recruit into a fighting man, said the lieutenant.
They're promising material, sir. I could do it in a couple of days, sir, said Jackram.
Perks?
Polly nearly sliced her thumb off. Yes, Sarge? She quavered.
Do you think you could kill a man today?
Polly glanced at the razor. The edge glowed.
I'm sorry to say I think I could, sir.
There you have it, sir, said Jackram with a lopsided grin. There's something about these lads, sir. They're quick.
He walked behind Blouse, took the razor from Polly's grateful hand without a word, and said,
There's a few matters we ought to discuss, sir, private-like. I think Perks here ought to get some rest.
Of course, Sergeant. Pardon les soldats jeunes, eh?
And them too, sir, said Jackram. You're dismissed, Perks.
Polly walked away, her right hand still trembling. Behind her, she heard Blouse sigh and say,
These are tricky times, Sergeant. Command has never been so burdensome. The great General Tacticus says that in dangerous times the commander must be like the eagle and see the whole, yet still be like the hawk and see every detail.
Yes, sir, said Jackram, gliding the razor down a cheek. And if he acts like a common tit, sir, he can hang upside down all day and eat fat bacon.
Well said, Sergeant. The charcoal burner and his wife were buried to the accompaniment of, to Polly's lack of surprise, a small prayer from Wazza. It asked the Duchess to intercede with the god Nuggan to give eternal rest and similar items to the departed. Polly had heard it many times before. She'd wondered how the process worked. She'd never prayed since the day the bird burned, not even when her mother was dying. A god that burned painted birds would not save a mother. A god like that was not worth a prayer. But Wazza prayed for everyone. Wazza prayed like a child, eyes screwed up and hands clenched until they were white. The reedy little voice trembled with such belief that Polly felt embarrassed, and then ashamed, and finally, after the ringing Amen, amazed that the world appeared no different than before. For a minute or two, it had been a better place. There was a cat in the hut. It cowered under the crude bed and spat at anyone who came close.
"All the food's been taken, but there's carrots and parsnips in a little garden down the hill a bit," Shufti said as they walked away.
"It'd be stealing from the dead," said Wazza.
"Well, if they object, they can hold on, can't they?" said Shufti. "They're underground already."
For some reason that was, at this time, funny. They'd have laughed at anything. Now there was Jade, Lofty, Shufti, and Polly. Everyone else was on guard duty. They sat by a fire, on which a small pot seethed. Lofty tended the fire. She always seemed more animated near a fire, Polly noticed.
"I'm doing horse scubble for the Rupert,"
said Shufti, easily dropping into a slang learned all of 20 hours ago.
"He specifically asked for it. Got lots of dry horse jerky from Three Parts, but Tonka says she can knock over some pheasants while she's on duty."
"I hope she spent some time watching for enemies too," said Polly.
"She'll be careful," said Lofty, prodding the fire with a stick.
"You know, if we're found out, we'll be beaten and sent back," said Shufti.
"Oh, by," said Polly, so suddenly she surprised herself. "By whom? Who's going to try out here? Who cares out here?"
"Well, wearing men's clothes is an abomination unto Nuggan."
"Why?"
"It just is," said Shufti firmly. "But
you're wearing 'em?" said Polly.
"Well, it was the only way," said Shufti, "and I tried them on, and they didn't seem all that abominable to me."
"Have you noticed the men talk to you differently?" said Lofty, shyly.
"Talk?" said Polly. "They listen to you differently, too."
"They don't keep looking at you all the time," said Shufti. "You know what I mean? You're just another person. If a girl walked down the street wearing a sword, a man would try to take it off her."
"We're trolls. We ain't allowed to carry clubs," said Jade. "Only large rocks. And it ain't right for a girl to wear lichen, 'cause the boys say bald is modest. Had to rub bird doings into my head to grow this lot."
That was quite a long speech for a troll.
We didn't know that, said Polly. Trolls all look the same to us, more or less.
I'm naturally craggy, said Jade. I don't see why I should polish.
There is a difference, said Shufti. I think it's the socks. It's like they pull you forward all the time. It's like
The whole world spins around your socks. She sighed and looked at the horse meat, which had been boiled almost white.
It's done, she said. You'd better go and give it to the Rupert, Polly. I mean, Ozza. I told the Sarge I could do something better, but he said the lieutenant said how good it was last night.
A small wild turkey, a brace of pheasants, and a couple of rabbits, all tied together, landed in front of Shufti.
Good job we were guarding you, eh?
Said Tonka, grinning and whirring an empty sling around in one hand. One rock, one lunch. Maledict's staying on guard. He said he'll smell anyone before they see him, and he's too edgy to eat. What can you do with that lot?
Casserole of game, said Shufti firmly. We've got the veg, and I've still got half an onion.
A woman always has half an onion left over, no matter what the size of the onion, the dish, or the woman.
I'm sure I can make an oven out of one of those.
On your feet, attention!
Snapped the silently moving Jackram behind them. He stood back with a faint smile on his face as they scrambled to their feet.
Private Halter, I must have bleeding amazing eyesight, he said when they were approximately upright.
Yes, Sarge,
said Tonka, staring straight ahead.
Can you guess why, Private Halter?
No, Sarge.
It's because I knows you are on perimeter guard, Halter, but I can see you as clear as if you were standing right here in front of me, Halter. Can't I, Halter?
Yes, Sarge.
It's just as well you are still on perimeter duty, Halter, because the penalty for absenting yourself from your post in time of war is death, Halter.
Are you only?
No onlys. I don't want to hear no onlys. I don't want you to think that I am a shouty man, Halter. Corporal Strappy was a shouty man, but he was a damn political. Upon my oath, I am not a shouty man, but if you ain't back at your post inside of 30 seconds, I'll rip your tongue out.
Tonka fled.